Welcome to Views from the Corner Office, a conversation with private sector leaders who influence and impact the federal market. Views from the Corner Office delivers a perspective on technology, acquisition, and leadership issues through the lens of executives who lead the federal practices of government. Now your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome to the program. My guest today is Jimmy Atkins, the Vice President of Federal for Ruckus Networks. Jimmy, welcome to the program.
Pleasure to be here.
Views from the Corner Office is a continued monthly discussion about federal contractors and what you're seeing in the market. So let's start right there. The state of the federal market, is it a good time to be a federal contractor?
Oh, I think it's an absolutely fantastic time. You know, the federal government is the largest consumer of technology in the world. And so I think this is a great time to be in the federal space.
When I talk to other vendors and over the last year and a half or so for this program, I always start with that question because I always like to get a different perspective. And it's interesting because definitely the optimism has swung forward, not just because of the government's consumer needs or because of, you know, the fact is that they're, you know, they're going to pay their bills, hopefully.
Yes, yes.
But why do you say it's a good time? I mean, the margins are tight. There's a chance of shutdowns and continuing resolutions. Procurement takes too long. And there's 101 reasons I could tell you why would anyone be a government contractor? But you seemed, I mean, you're there. You're excited.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited. And if you look at the federal government over the last 20 years, they are always upgrading their technology. It does take a long time. I can tell you that, you know, you just listed several things that makes it really hard to deal with the federal government. And it's not for the meek. It's you really got to put your best foot forward going into working with the federal government. And especially this time of year, I think a lot of the networks were designed 20 years ago, implemented 10 years ago, and they need refreshing. And there's so many different agencies that are on different time levels. So being in the federal government for the last 30 years has been an amazing ride.
It's interesting you said not for the meek. I like that a lot because I think people forget that. Yes, the government has a lot of positives when you're a contractor, but there's the challenges is great too. When you talk about the changes and the challenges, what has changed over the last, you know, during your time of working for contractors in the federal government? What's some of the biggest changes you've seen?
What I've seen early on within the federal government, like I said, the last 30 years, the federal government actually led technology and led the companies to develop technologies for them. And over the last, I'd say, 10 to 15 years, the commercial industry has caught up and passed. And I think the federal government now realizes that. So they're working closely with the commercial partners, as I like to call them, bringing those technologies back into the federal government. Now, when we talked about it being there is a cost to work with the federal government. And it really, as a taxpayer, it needs to be because it's all around security of your products. So in order to sell into the federal government, you have to have certifications on your products to sell that. And that's a good thing. And you know, along with that, too, you have to have a secure supply chain. You got to make sure the company is in line with that. So that's where I talk about it being really difficult to.
You bring up two of my favorite topics, cybersecurity, and then secure supply chain. Let's go down that path maybe a little bit. I wrote a story recently about a month ago about the Defense Department, and I was at a Professional Services Council event where they talked about Katie Arrington from the Office of Secretary of Defense. She says, security is an allowable cost. She says that, and it's not just that it wasn't before, but they're making it a point because they're pushing forward with the cybersecurity maturity certification model. Give me a sense, and I don't know how much work you guys do with DoD, but generally the supply chain, the cybersecurity, how much downward pressure is that having on government contractors from agencies, whether it's DoD, Intel, or civilian?
We take a different approach when we look at that. Instead of it being a pain in the butt to deal with security on that, yeah, we actually embrace that because if you're building products that meet government certifications and standards, your products become better for your other customers on the commercial side.
So when you guys work through the supply chain piece, right, that's something that's really in the last 18, maybe 24 months has come to the forefront. And I'll point it as maybe one of the trends that we're seeing. You know, especially when you talk about what Ruckus Networks does, which is networking and mobile and wireless, so much of that, like Huawei and ZTE concerns have popped up. How are you guys dealing with those issues around supply chain?
We've adopted, you know, strict standards on our supply chain. All of our equipment is TAA compliant that we sell to the federal government. And so that allows us, one, you know, to make sure that integrity is there through the supply chain. So we work very hard with our operations team to make sure that that's in place.
Do you think that this move by the government for the supply chain, I think it makes sense. We can make, it's an easy argument to make. But why did it take so long? Even if you say something's TAA compliant, it doesn't mean it's not without potential malware slash challenges of from a cybersecurity perspective and potential, you know, the gray market as commonly known.
Yeah, I really believe over the last 10 to 15 years, it's come to the forefront because of the adversaries. I think if you look years ago, you know, the biggest threat was inside the network. And now with China and Russia, you know, attacking the networks on a daily basis, it's become a forefront within the federal government and also with commercial companies in the United States.
NIST put out a recent draft publication with that had a deadline of mid-July around controlled unclassified information, protecting information on vendor systems. And I think this plays into this discussion about supply chain. How much of a cost, how much of a change is it for you guys as you looking at RFPs and RFIs and there's requests from the government? Where do you, is supply chain a bigger evaluation factor? What's a trend you're seeing around that?
Oh, no, we're absolutely seeing that trend. It is a bigger evaluation. We've noticed that in several of the RFPs that come out. And for us, it's something that we do on a daily basis that, that's been in our DNA for a long time. So we just make sure that we tighten down the bolts on all that and we're able to provide a secure supply chain.
That's one trend that we've seen over the last maybe, you know, again, 18, 24 months. What other trends would you point to that you're seeing in the federal market today?
What I'm seeing is the way that the federal government is consuming networks now, and as a service, I'm hearing that more and more. A lot of contracts are coming out that way. The Air Force is talking about that. The Army, although we heard yesterday at FCDC luncheon that the Marine Corps is still taking a stance of we'll listen to what you have to say, but we really want to work on that, which I appreciate. Right, they want to make sure that. That it provides what they're needing. But again, if you look at as a service, it just makes sense because there's so many different agencies in the federal government and having them being the, you know, procuring the network, operating the network, maintaining the network. And as you know, with technology upgrading so fast that by the time you install a network, it's almost due for an upgrade. So that's as a service, I think, and providing SLAs is the way to go.
You bring up the as-a-service model, and that's something that we've seen over the years, whether it's seat management or NMCI or whichever. Why do you think this is now popular again? What's so attractive about it? I mean, we've had this opportunity across government for years, and it has its fits and starts and some successes, not maybe enough successes. What makes it different this time in terms of why is it popular?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest reasons, I know there's an agency that's getting ready to put an RFI out. Their pain point is the number of cases, the number of issues they have on their network. And as a IT organization within that agency, there's not enough time to fix all those issues in there. And by letting that out to an as a service and providing SLAs will save them a ton of money, a ton of time. And they'll also be able to provide their users, right? The IT has got customers with great experience on their network.
So in a sense, it's just a part of the evolution of the network where it's gotten so big and so arduous to deal with, and the government's also dealing with the legacy, the technical debt as it's commonly known, that it's just coming back around maybe because it's time, because it makes sense, and because maybe you guys in the industry are a little better at it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And you look at how fast technology is changing. And like I mentioned before, agencies that put in a network, you know, they design it 5 years ago, they put it in this year and it's already out of date by the time it's installed. You know, that's one issue. And then, you know, just the troubleshooting of that network, the IT staff that you have to build to support that network gets very expensive.
You brought up as a service. It's a fascinating discussion that we're seeing more from. You mentioned Army, you mentioned Air Force. We're seeing it in some places like the Homeland Security Department, for example, as at least interested in this concept of as a service, managed services. What are maybe some other trends you're also starting to see that some of your customers are asking about or are interested in?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of discussion around 5G and private LTE within building. 5G is being talked about all the time. It's coming. It's supposed to be the savior. I am excited about it. And, you know, we're well positioned with that technology. And there's also technologies with inside the building that are critical that will help solve a lot of issues with private LTE.
I don't think I've heard the term private LTE. Just give me the 50,000-foot view of what that means.
Yeah. So right now, your cell phone is connected to a service provider, AT&T, Verizon, and you know, that's expensive. You have to pay for that. Well, you can today, there's a technology called CBRS, and we have it on our access points where you can deploy private LTE. You manage the network. It's agnostic, so it doesn't need – it can use anybody's telephone in there.
Is it almost like you put it on your Wi-Fi? It's like enhanced Wi-Fi or?
Well, it's a little better than an enhanced Wi-Fi because Wi-Fi is shared, right? Private LTE is dedicated. It is LTE, so it's inherently secure. Quality of service is there. And when you get inside these buildings that, you know, with the way they're being built today, 5G is going to have a tough time penetrating those buildings, so you can actually have private LTE for cell phone. But that's just one, you know, Internet of Things is another huge topic that we see, and that kind of leads into the CBRS discussion also.
All right, Jimmy, there's a lot there to dig out of, even 5G. I'm going to ask you if it even exists. But first, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can continue a conversation looking at some trends. My guest is Jimmy Atkins, the Vice President of Federal for Ruckus Networks. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Views from a Corner Office on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Views from a Corner Office on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today, Jimmy Atkins, the Vice President of Federal for Ruckus Networks. Jimmy, before break, we were talking a little bit about some of the trends you guys are seeing. You mentioned 5G as one of those. I have to ask you, does it even exist? Do we even know what 5G is? I can't go to a conference without hearing, you know, the buzzwords of like AI, machine learning, and 5G. What are you hearing from your federal customers?
Well, if you look at my cell phone, it says that we have 5G, but it's actually not. So it's not there yet. It's coming. It's the next generation of LTE. And so the federal government is actually very interested in that because they use those networks quite extensively.
But what kind of conversations are you having with your customers about it? I mean, is it like how do you prepare the network today for 5G in 5 years or in 10 years? Because we've heard these promises before about, oh, the next great fill in the blank and they never
came, or
was never as great as it should have been.
Yeah, well, if you look at those trends, I believe it is coming, and if you look at the service providers, they have stepped up to it and say they're going to provide it. Although some are saying provide a little bit earlier than it's actually there, but it is going to take a while to build up. Those are all new antennas. Your cell phone has to have the right chip in it to support it. So cell phones today don't have that. There are some, I believe, one-offs that have that, but they're coming, and that's really what will push the technology is once the handsets get that chipset in it. But the conversation that we're having, you know, with the federal, they're very interested in 5G. What's that provide? But a lot of them think that's going to help with indoor wireless and cellular. And quite frankly, that's where the discussion gets very interesting because, well, as I mentioned before, 5G will not penetrate most of the buildings. And if you do want 5G in the building, you got to put expensive DASs up. And you have to put up one for each of the carriers, and that becomes a really expensive solution. So we're talking to them about Wi-Fi 6, which is the next generation Wi-Fi, and also CBRS, which is you can have it your own CBRS access point or a dongle that hooks onto the access point. And now the discussion becomes you can get that technology inside the building like you have it on the outside of the building with 5G.
Why is it important to get that technology? Because if I'm going to the cloud, if all I need is to be able to connect back to Office 365 to do my email, why do I need 5G?
Yeah, well, if you look inside the building and the influx of Internet of Things with locks, with cameras and cell phones, so there's a great need if the federal agencies want to keep up with technology. I at my house now, I feel like, I have cameras, I have my HVC connected to it, I can control all of that. And if you take a look at that and then putting it on a Wi-Fi network that's today, it's not going to be able to keep up. So because the Wi-Fi is actually best effort. And if you can look at a technology like CBRS, where it's an LTE connection and it's the quality of service that you can guarantee to those access points.
You mentioned CBRS a couple times. Is it, does it stand for something, or is it?
Yes, it does. Yeah. So yes, CBRS stands for Citizens Broadband Radio Service. And what that is the FCC has allocated for a spectrum, 3.5 gigahertz, that anybody can use. And where that's important is the big service providers have to buy that, and then they have to charge the customers for that. So this is a spectrum that's opened up to to folks that can use it and use private LTE for it.
And it's all about bandwidth. It gives us more spectrum, more bandwidth, more ability to push data, if you will.
That's right. That's right. And it and inherently LTE is secure, so it also helps secure. And also the data. So for example, if somebody's making a phone call or sending information over LTE on their phone, it goes to the service providers. Private LTE, you can keep all that data for yourself, and then you do run analytics on it to make sure it's safe.
Interesting. I think it's something we'll probably start seeing come into the federal market over time as this gets more, becomes more available, both for the carriers like Verizon, AT&T, as you mentioned, but also as agencies start to get wind of that. At the same time, you mentioned the IoT, Internet of Things, devices and smart devices. You mentioned your own house, and you got to have enough bandwidth to deal with all those devices. And that takes us down the path of smart bases. That's a big push across DOD. And then we're also probably starting to see that within, like, for instance, the General Services Administration and the Public Building Service has really been doing a lot with the smart technology to understand, when to cool, when to heat, and things like that. Give me a sense of how this all fits into this better, faster, cheaper, bigger network.
Yeah, well, if you look at smart bases, you can line that right up to the smart cities, and that's something that we've played in Ruckus for several years now, and it's actually providing access onto that base for everybody, and that's really a premise. When you start looking at that and adding all those Internet of Devices things onto the network, it's going to put a huge strain on the network, and that's where technologies like CBRS, Wi-Fi 6 will come into play to be able to support that.
Roughly, and maybe this is a guess, so you'll put up with me. How far away are we from things like 5G, CBRS, Wi-Fi 6? Are we talking about, 6 months, a year, 5 years?
Yeah, so Wi-Fi 6 is out now. So Ruckus was one of the first to market on that. So we'll see that. And then what's important about that, too, is the multi-gigabit speeds on that Wi-Fi 6. So now the switches behind that need to support that, and Ruckus has those products. And then within CBRS, I think that's, we have pilots now, some interesting pilots that we have. For example, at Daytona Speedway, when you have 200,000 people show up on race day and your point of sale is on the Wi-Fi, it's really tough to get point of sales across. So providing that CBRS private LTE is working out fantastic for them.
All right, something to watch for as things kind of continue to evolve. Let me switch a little bit and talk a little bit about Ruckus in terms of how you guys are approaching the federal market. I mean, how is things, you mentioned it, you've been kind of in the federal market for about 30 years. How is the way you guys or any vendor really approaches the federal market, how has that changed over the last, 3, 5, 7 years or more in terms of both customers, but also getting in front of customers, presenting to customers? There's been a whole trend of show me, don't tell me. As an example, the SLAs have changed. How do you guys approach the market differently today?
Yeah, well, what I've seen several years ago is a big push of us getting in front of our customers, showing them our products and the technology. And over the last few years, I've really seen the federal government reaching out to industry and inviting us to come talk. I think there's been years ago and even today, there's vendor lock-in and not able to see the technology that's out there. So really, we're getting asked to come in to show the technology that we have, because it's changing every day, and the federal government has to keep up with that, and they've got to reach out to industry to find that.
A couple of vendors I've talked to are mixed on this. Some love the request for information, the RFI process. Others hate it. What's your take on RFIs?
Oh, no, I think it's great. It gives us a chance to present the customer the technology that we have today. And if it's behind closed doors, they're going to miss something that's out there. And so that's very important.
What, from an RFP perspective, whether it's the self-evaluation scoring we're seeing with things like OASIS and Alliant 2, or some of the reverse industry days that the IRS, the Homeland Security Department is doing. What are some of the things in the federal market that you're saying, hey, I wish they would do more of, or on the vice versa, I wish they'd do less of? Or if I guess the third piece of it would be what commercial practices that are out there that you'd say, hey, I wish the government would adopt. What comes to mind?
A recent RFI that we responded to, we put in some technology we're working on that we've talked about today, CBRS, and they were extremely interested in, and they have asked us to come in and talk to them more about that. A lot of times when you send these RFIs in, you just don't hear from them and they make an award. And so it'd be nice to be invited to the table, you know, all of us. We do really well in a bake-off. And so those are the trends I'd like to see.
Does the bake-off require you guys to, for instance, do like a prototype? And is that a cost that you're okay with?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And that's something that, you know, when we talked about dealing with the federal government, it's not for the meek, right? There is a cost to deal with that. But it's extremely important because, you know, on the commercial side, we usually get invited in to do these bake-offs and we do very well at those. So.
Do you ever have a concern that the government doesn't have the subject matter expertise to understand what you're presenting from a bake-off perspective? Is that an area where you'd like to see, you know, maybe more government training or more government understanding? Again, you live in a world of network modernization.
That's right. Yeah. And I think if I can bring up Terry Halverson from years ago, he made it a point to bring the CIOs out to Silicon Valley to meet with the companies. That should happen all the time. That's a very good way to get our products, our technology in front of these decision makers.
In fact, that was a great example because Tony Scott, the former federal CIO, did a very similar trip. I think he went to Silicon Valley, and I know Suzette Kent, the current federal CIO, actually took people up north to New York. And I think they went to some of the big investment firms, J.P. Morgan Chase as an example, to look at their technology and talk to their CIOs. Jimmy, let's take another quick break. When we come back, we can jump into what really Ruckus Networks is and what you do for it. My guest is Jimmy Atkins, the Vice President of Federal for Ruckus Networks. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Views from a Corner Office on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Views from a Corner Office on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Jimmy Atkins, the Vice President of Federal for Ruckus Networks. Jimmy, we talked before break about some of the trends we've seen, the 5G. We learned a new term, CBRS. I learned that. Thank you for that. Wi-Fi 6, didn't know that was coming. So there's a couple things there that are really important that federal agencies and federal buyers should be aware of. But let's talk about Ruckus a little bit, your role at Ruckus and Ruckus's place in the federal market. Let's start with you're the Vice President of Federal. How long have you been in that role? Give me a little bit about your background.
I've actually been serving the federal government for 30 years now in different roles. Started out as an engineer for Contel years ago, running networks in the Pentagon, the JSAN networks for those out there that have been around for a while. Remember that network. But currently I'm running the Ruckus Federal for the last 2.5 years. We've enjoyed great success over the last year. You know, I know you were going to mention M&As here shortly. I think I'm got a lot of experience in that. We've been acquired 3 times over the last 3 years, which has been an adventure, but it's actually, as we look at it today, CommScope 3 months ago closed the acquisition of Ruckus. And if you look at the combined companies, it's 30,000 employees, markets all over the world. But what's really interesting for me, being a technologist, is the R&D budget that they bring to the table. It's close to $1 billion.
So you used to run networks in the Pentagon. Were those IBM mainframe or were they client server?
Yeah, we actually, and I was telling AJ earlier, we actually replaced, I'm really dating myself, we replaced typewriters with Spark workstations. And I think we ran barbed wire in between the routers to get that going. But,
I remember years ago, the government had Wang computers and they were all green screens and they thought they were the big deal. And then the client server happened and mainframes and stuff. When you talk about Ruckus, you guys are network, mobile, wireless, what other kind
That's
of
right.
sectors?
Yeah. And then with the acquisition of CommScope, we're now industrial strength cable plant. So along with antennas, with their acquisition of Andrews, provide DAS, they have a services arm. So it's really exciting time to be at Ruckus and this combined company. They do a lot of work on their side of the federal team, too, which is exciting.
Are you guys in mostly civilian, mostly DOD, a mix?
Yeah, well, within Ruckus, it's mostly DOD. There are also some Intel customers that we have contracts there. Civilian agencies are looking at us real hard and adopting us in some areas.
All right, very interesting. And let's talk your background. You were at Rutgers for 2.5 years. You were other companies you worked at?
Yeah, so I've been actually here 15 years, but I've had 4 different badges because of the acquisition. So I started out as Foundry Networks, Brocade, Ruckus, Aeris, and now CommScope. So it's been quite a ride, but I tell you what, like I said before, it's an exciting time. It seems like there's a lot of disruptions with those acquisitions, but at each time we've grown the business, which has been fantastic.
So. Do you still have all those business cards? Do you have them somewhere?
You know, I actually handed out one yesterday. I had to scratch out the email address.
Yeah. That's okay. We all understand that. Part of the show that I really do enjoy is finding a little bit more about the person I'm interviewing. So tell me something that maybe outside of federal, what do you like to do? What's some hobbies? What's something that maybe a lot of people don't know about you?
I've been in technology my entire life, and I drive a pickup truck. And I love bass fishing. If I could actually catch fish, I would rather be on the Bassmasters tour than working for sure. But I can't catch fish that well.
So here's the question, right? So what kind of truck do you drive, right? Because I think that people are going to judge you on that. Ooh. And what's the biggest fish you've ever caught? So start with the truck.
Yeah, the truck is a Ford F-150. The biggest fish I got was this big.
For radio people, it's this big. So what are we about, like 10 pounds, 5 pounds?
Yeah,
how
actually,
big is that?
It's 10.1 pounds for a largemouth bass caught in a little private pond behind Dwight Howard's house in Orlando.
There you go. It's a little interesting tidbit that people don't know. Did Dwight know you were there, or did you sneak in?
We snuck in.
All right, good, excellent. Yeah. Good. We won't tell your security clearances that. Let's move on to acquisition discussion. We'll come back to out of bass fishing, though. I guess we could talk longer about that. There's a lot of government-wide acquisition contracts, GWACs, multiple award contracts, MACs, as they're commonly known. What's your take on the current status? First of all, are you guys on any multiple award type contracts, GSA schedules or others?
Yeah.
And is there too many? Is there not enough? What's your take about that?
Yeah, well, we are on several contracts. Is there too many? Probably. You talk with different folks and they say, what do you think about these contracts? And when you're on them, you love them. When you're not, you don't. And you're fighting to get on those contracts. But there is, you know, some issues that we have with, contracts being awarded and there's vendor lock-in and they get stuck with the technology that they have and they can't go outside and look. So, really pushing on these contracts to allow technology to come in. Because, again, we talked about how quickly technology is changing throughout the years.
We're seeing a lot of on-ramps. For instance, I'll bring up GSA's Oasis as an example, a lot of interest in that. Is that the answer, you think, that agencies should open up some of these multiple award contracts more often, maybe every 6 months, every year? I mean, we saw something similar with the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program for cybersecurity. They started to move their acquisition strategy towards these on-ramps on the schedule. Just give me a sense of
that's right. Yeah.
Broadly.
Yeah, and I think they just need to make it easier for companies to bring their technology to the customer. And, they charge a tax, each time you go on there, and then it gets competed again within the contract. And that, that gets charged back to the federal government. So an easier way to bring technology in and a less expensive way is really what we're looking for.
One of the things you bring up is this idea of got to make it easier to bring technology to the customer. And a lot of agencies are, I think, trying to do that through on-ramps and other ways. But what would you suggest, or what are some things that you've seen work in the federal government that can ensure that not just, you guys just don't present to one person, but there's a lot of people who understand the potential of whether it's your technology or anyone else's?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, as we talked about earlier, the CIOs of these agencies are doing a really good job reaching out to industry and gathering that information. Where I think, the government could be better served is you go down and make sure that information goes down to the folks that are actually designing the networks that are in charge with putting those networks together and paying for them.
When you meet with your federal customers and potential federal customers, are the right people in the room, generally speaking, do you get a sense, or is it hard to say?
It's really not, right? So like I said, CIOs are very, very accessible. They do a fantastic job of reaching out, and it's getting down to the guys that are actually designing. And again, I think, for their sake, they're extremely busy, and they have a solution in their head that they've worked with a vendor, and they don't have time to go look out. And that's where I think, you know, technology in the federal government gets stuck and not being adopted as fast.
It's interesting that you've brought up vendor lock-in a couple times. What do you see from agencies in terms of, is it because of the way they're contracting that sometimes they get hung up on a specific technology, or is it the lack of time and resources to go look at what is the art of the possible?
Yeah, I think it's both, right? You got some folks that you know, you're going to design what you know. And then there's the other, hey, I'm designing a network to modernize my equipment, and I don't have time to go out and look at what else is out there.
Jimmy, the other piece of this when we talk about GWAX and MAX is the cost to companies. Is that a concern for you that every time there's a new RFP that comes out of another multiple work contract that you have to bid on or partner with, is that becoming, you know, that cost, is that a concern for Ruckus?
It is a cost, right? And it's not free. And you know, I think industry wide, and it's not just a Ruckus issue, that cost will be passed back on. Now we do our best to add value to the customer and reduce as much of those costs, but it's a real cost.
All right, Jimmy, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can jump into M&A and a couple other topics to finish up our conversation. My guest is Jimmy Atkins, the Vice President of Federal for Ruckus Networks. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Views from a Corner Office on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Views from a Corner Office on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Jimmy Atkins, the Vice President of Federal for Ruckus Networks. Jimmy, before break, you mentioned a couple times the idea of M&A. You guys at Ruckus Networks were acquired, you said, three times?
Three times in 3 years, yeah. So I think I'm kind of an expert in that area.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing that you were?
Us, it's been an incredible ride. What it has done is strengthen our product portfolio. And I can just say, you know, if you look around the industry that sells to the federal government, there's been lots of M&A. Lately, too, even with the big systems integrators. So for us, it's been really good because we do have a strengthened portfolio. We have an end-to-end solution now, all the way up to the applications to the data center.
Why were you guys acquired three times? Did someone not want you, or it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger?
It kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. I always say, hey, they're not buying you unless your product is good. So we've been acquired. You know, we started out as a switching company. We added wireless to that. Now we've added, industrial strength infrastructure to that.
Do you get a sense, though, you mentioned some of the big systems integrators, the merging and the acquisitions that are happening there. Do you get a concern from your perspective that there's too much M&A, or do you think it's healthy for the federal sector?
No, I think it's absolutely healthy. Now, I will tell you, during the M&A, when that happens, there is disruption within those companies because especially within the large systems integrator, it takes time to merge those companies together, and that slows them down. But at the end of the day, like with the acquisition we're going through, you come out stronger, and that's better for the federal government.
Do you have a concern that we're going to either get really large or really small companies and that medium size? I mean, where's Ruckus fit? Would you guys say you're about a medium-sized company?
So 30,000 employees, $11 billion in revenue.
So I'm probably not so medium.
Not so medium. But Ruckus was, $800 million company. We've kind of, I've seen the small startup companies that I've been at all the way to the large companies. And really at the end of the day, it's about the people at those companies and the products that you sell. And as long as that's strong and the culture is strong with those companies, you're going to be okay.
At the same time, I guess I could make the argument that if you have 10 companies that were providing this widget, now you only have three companies that are providing the widget, that's probably bad for the federal sector. And there's concern about potential, price competition. If you guys go out of business, is there somebody else to take your place? I mean, that all, I think that discussion is happening within government. I think you see it in the Defense Department especially.
Yeah, that's right. And the government has checks and balances for that. Obviously, three or more vendors selling into a space is healthy. I think nine gets a little complicated. And then we talked about the whole, scenario where, the CIOs understand the technology that's out there. And it's one layer down of the folks that are designing these networks. If you throw nine vendors at them that do all the same thing, that makes their job even harder.
It's interesting you bring up three is probably healthy, nine maybe too many. What the government has been trying to do over the last, if you will, you know, 3 or 4 years, you know, I think it's really come to a head in the last 12 months or so, is this push for innovation. We've got to bring more companies in, small companies. And then you've seen the push for other transaction authorities, OTAs, and now there's something called commercial service organizations. What's your take on OTAs? Good, bad? Is it, you know, for me, I have some questions.
Yeah, I think OTAs are fantastic. You know, for companies like us that have leading edge technology that we're just developing or getting ready to come out with, that we can insert that into the federal government quickly. Where I have a problem is when the big incumbents use OTAs to bring technology that they already have, and using that's an issue to me.
Oh, you mean like that Air Force OTA with these? I don't know if you've heard of the small company called Microsoft and AT&T. I'm not sure if you've heard about them.
I've heard of Microsoft.
They have this OTA. They're really innovative and up and coming. That's a very questionable OTA. Do you get concerned though? Because you said you like it for companies like us, but at the same time, there's no bid protest rights. You know, they don't really have to go out with a real RFP. And, you know, I think there's a lot of concern about the transparency that's happening, especially with this consortium approach.
That's right.
Is that all worrisome? Because
it is, especially as a taxpayer, right? At the end of the day, we pay taxes to the federal government. And we want to, you know, make sure there's checks and balances when you are doing programs like that. You know, I think it's a fantastic idea to have that money set aside for that. But there needs to be checks and balances to make sure that it is going to the right technology.
Are you seeing more and more interest in OTAs? I know specifically DoD has been using a lot of them, but are you starting to see some of your civilian customers talking about whether it's OTA or some other approach to bring in these innovative companies?
We absolutely are. Yeah, we're seeing more and more of that. You know, we talked about CBRS earlier, and that's one of our avenues to bring that technology to the federal government. So, yeah, we're seeing a lot of that. It's a big buzzword lately, and, you know,
well, in terms of the discussions you're having, like, do you hear saying, well, how can we get you guys in faster? Or hey, what if we could, like, give me a sense of when you talk to those customers, what are they telling you? We can't wait, you know, 6 months or 9 months for the regular procurement process, or what are they saying?
Yeah. So that is a big concern, right, is when, you know, when products get ordered, is how fast we can deliver that. The technology, right, is moving so fast, and making sure that the government doesn't get too far ahead of their skis and put technology that's not ready yet. But so we've addressed, you know, the delivery time of products. So we've done a very good job of making sure our distributors and our partners have the product on hand to deliver quickly. And that's one of the scenarios where we've done very good at and has differentiated us.
I know that a lot of agencies talk about terms and conditions, and that's a big push to, you know, how quickly can you deliver and then how quickly can you get set up. Is that one of those obstacles, like, that the government is not asking for, fair timelines? Or, hey, commercial's just as challenging. They want their stuff. They want it now.
Yeah. I see, you know, on the commercial side, they absolutely want it now. When they spend that money, they want to get it. There are agencies, right, when you get rated orders that got to be delivered by a certain date, and we're able to meet those. You know, for us, to be a little bit selfish, I would like all of them to be rated because we can deliver on those products.
Jimmy, this has been a fascinating conversation. We're just about out of time. Before I let you go, I want to circle back to the beginning of our conversation, because something has occurred to me as you brought up, we talked about supply chain and we talked about some of the threats, and you brought up certifications. Is that maybe the biggest challenge that you see for vendors these days is the time it takes and the challenge of too many certifications or getting certifications generally? Is that the biggest challenge you see for vendors?
For us, absolutely. And I can tell you, you know, I love the certifications we talked about earlier. It just makes your product stronger, right? We have technology we're trying to deliver today. And, you know, it's a challenge to test all this equipment and to make sure they're certified within these agencies, within NIST and DOT and APL. And we work very closely with those agencies to get our products certified. And now there's a cost to it. And that's where sometimes I, you know, talk about, well, the federal government gets locked into a vendor, but yet if you want to sell to the federal government, you got to pay this money to get certified. But then you get locked out because there's vendor lockout. So that's an issue there. But again, with the certifications, not sure how quickly they can do it because it is a very time consuming process. And it's something that has to be done. I'm very, on that.
I know a lot of vendors have, I'll use the word complained about the time it takes around stuff like FedRAMP, the Federal Risk Authorization Management Program for Cloud Services. I think Ruckus went through that program as well, right?
That's right. Yep.
And that obviously took time. It took money, it took resources. But they seem to be figuring out how to speed that up too. Would you like to see that happen in maybe some of these other certifications, whether FIPS or whomever?
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about, the time it does take to test these. But again, it's very important that these products get tested. But again, I just think it's another step that you have to deal with the federal government. It's a good step, but speeding that process up to get technology to the federal government would be quicker.
All right, Jimmy, this has just been a fascinating conversation. I do appreciate your time today, but unfortunately, we are out of time. So let me thank my guest, Jimmy Atkins, the Vice President of Federal for Ruckus Networks. Jimmy, thank you so much.
Oh, I appreciate it, Jason. Thanks for the time.
I'm Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Views from a Corner Office on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
You've been listening to Views from the Corner Office on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Tune in Fridays at noon or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.